Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Connect Education Workshop, which is done in partnership with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, who are funding this program as well. So I really want to thank them for making this program possible through their generous donation. And today's program is Metastatic Triple Negative Breast Cancer Strategies to Cope, and it's part one of Living with Triple Negative Breast Cancer. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, there are a couple of things I'd like to do. First, I'd like to let you all know that there are over 250 participants on the call, and you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a number of international participants from Canada, Namibia, the Philippines, South Africa, Switzerland, Tanzania, the United Kingdom, and Germany as well. And it's amazing to have so many of you on this call today and from all over the world. This is truly a global call. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Jessica Trevino-Jones, and Dr. Jones is breast medical oncologist, Mays Cancer Center Associate Professor, Division of Hematology Oncology, the University of Texas Health Sciences Center at San Antonio, the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio, Director, Cancer Risk Reduction and Education Program, UT Health San Antonio, MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Jones will be addressing updates on the treatment of metastatic triple-negative breast cancer with novel treatment therapies and clinical trial updates, how research offers additional treatment options. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Jones.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for such a lovely introduction. And thank you to all our listeners for taking the time for this call today. I'm Dr. Jessica Jones, and I'm honored today to speak about some of the newest updates for metastatic negative breast cancer with our novel treatment therapies and discussing just how important research trials are. And I'd like to say that this is coming off of a time, what a time to have this conversation today following a international conference, ESMO 2025, which just wrapped up in Berlin, Germany from October 17th to October 21st. And clinical trials are so important in the context of metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. They are critical because, as we've seen before, standard options had previously been limited, and these studies are a conduit for innovation. Clinical trials move us from preclinical promise to benefit. Which new therapy work? Is this one more effective than what we already have? Is it safe? And so while we consider these novel clinical trials that I will shortly be sharing with you, I want to emphasize that we have novel antibody drug conjugates and immunotherapy combinations that have entered the triple negative breast cancer space that are going to be showing us meaningful benefit. And we have other speakers on our call today that I know will go into further detail about genomics and diagnostic testing and biomarkers. But I'd like to first give some updates on some of the research that has been presented in this conference. First, we have some updates for metastatic triple negative breast cancer, especially for those that are unable to take immunotherapy. That is to say, patients that do not have a marker called PD-L1 on their tumor. We have updates from two important clinical trials, ASCENT-03 and TROPION-02, but in other words, these clinical trials, what they look like are two very important drugs. They're both very challenging to say. One, saxatubinib, govitecan, or Trodelvy, and our other, which we abbreviate ODXD. Both of these drugs have been shown to have really meaningful responses to metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, where one trial showed us that saxatubimab govitecan, also called Trodelvy, increased progression-free survival, giving us a new opportunity for treatment where we previously did not, for a patient that is unable to get immunotherapy. We had another clinical trial, Tropion, which showed us datopotamab deruxtecan, again abbreviated Dato-DXd, which showed that for patients that were unable to get immunotherapy, that progression-free survival, it was improved compared to investigator's choice of chemotherapy. Now, while I could spend more time discussing all of the different drugs or all the different numbers, I want to instead share that there is now a shift that we're seeing for first-line treatment for PD-L1 negative advanced triple-negative breast cancer. And this is important because even as early as a couple years ago, patients are still currently relying on chemotherapy. And chemotherapy may not have our best outcomes. So while we are having these new updates and new drug trials, we are looking not only at outcomes such as progression-free survival. My partners later on this phone call, both Dr. Finucci and Dr. Smith, will talk about the different side effects and how to manage all of these new non-therapies. Well, in any case, there's potentially new standards of care for triple-negative breast cancer for those who are unable to receive therapy. But still also, I want to highlight that immunotherapy for those with PD-L1 positive breast cancer are having improved survival as well with new data that's being released. Clinical trials, at the end of the day, while I'm sharing with you these three important updates, namely you a possible new standard of care, all of this comes because of a patient enrolling in a trial. In a clinical trial means access to therapy that could be the next standard of care. The results that I'm able to share with you today, these new life-saving measures, is a direct response. It is the action of women participated years ago in these trials. From a certain perspective, trials will guide regulatory approval, and they help us shape guidelines. And while not all clinical trials succeed, the benefit is there to know that we are, one, looking at therapies in the real world, and two, we're building new foundations. So for triple-negative breast cancer in the metastatic space, I'm happy to report during my 8 minutes of this conversation that our novel treatment therapies include antibody-drug conjugates that are showing promising response, giving us even more opportunity. There are going to be, later in our discussion, sequencing of treatments, again, and side effects as well. But if I can share anything, I want to make sure to share that participating in clinical trials are how we're going to continue to move the needle. Thank you, Dr. Let me share the new updates for metastatic triple-negative cancer from these results from ESMO 2025.
Oh, thank you so much. That was just a wonderful presentation. Lots of information for our participants, and I know there'll be lots of questions for you. And so just thank you so much. And you know, because you're the first speaker, you take the lead on the program to some extent. You really do. And so a stellar presentation, and I'm sure there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Christina Finucci, and Dr. Finucci is physician, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, instructor in medicine, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Finucci will be addressing biomarkers, diagnostic testing, sequencing of treatments, genomics, why they are so important, the role of precision medicine in improving treatment decisions. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Finucci.
Thanks so much, Dr. Mesner, for this invitation to speak today, and I'm excited to talk with you all about this important topic. When it comes to the biomarkers for triple-negative breast cancer, the biomarkers that have the biggest impact on our standard of care treatments are PD-L1, as Dr. Jones mentioned, HER2, and then mutations that result in homologous recombination repair deficiencies like BRCA1, BRCA2, and PALB2. PD-L1 is important because it helps determine if there will be potential benefit from the addition of an immune therapy to treatment. In the first-line metastatic setting for patients with PD-L1 positive disease, which we defined as a combined positive score or a CPS score of 10 or greater, there's a role for immune therapy in combination with other systemic treatments. Before we talk about treatments that are options for patients with PD-L1 positive disease, I think it's helpful just to go over what it means for a medicine to be an antibody-drug conjugate, which Dr. Jones helped highlight for us before. Antibody-drug conjugates are a category of medicines that I think of like a heat-seeking missile. On the front end, they have an antibody that's designed to home to a specific protein that's overexpressed on cancer cells. The antibody is connected by a linker to chemotherapy molecules it carries, and then it delivers these chemotherapy molecules directly to cancer cells, allowing us to give stronger anti-cancer medicines than we could give without this delivery mechanism. The ASCENT-04 trial, which is sort of the companion trial to the ASCENT-03 trial, which Dr. Jones just talked about, was presented this summer at our ASCO meeting. And that trial enrolled patients with PD-L1 positive disease and used the medication sacituzumab govitecan in combination with the immune therapy pembrolizumab, and found that patients who were treated with the combination of sacituzumab govitecan and pembrolizumab had longer time on the medicine than patients treated with traditional chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab. The KEYNOTE-355 trial that established traditional chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab as the standard first-line therapy for patients with PD-L1 positive disease found that the addition of pembrolizumab was not helpful for patients who had a CPS score of less than 10, which is why we use that cutoff. We're all excited about these data showing the benefit of sacituzumab plus pembrolizumab in the first-line setting in this patient population, and we're awaiting FDA approval of this combination, but expect that it may become standard first-line treatment for patients with PD-L1 positive disease in the coming year. The presence of HER2 low expression, which we define as HER2 1+ or 2+ with negative fluorescent in situ hybridization or FISH testing, also makes treatment with a different antibody-drug conjugate an option. This antibody-drug conjugate is called trastuzumab deruxtecan, and unlike with sacituzumab govitecan, which we use without the need to test for the TROP2 antibody that sacituzumab targets, we need to demonstrate that the tumor expresses some HER2, which is the protein that trastuzumab deruxtecan targets. The DESTINY-Breast04 trial showed us that there was benefit of trastuzumab deruxtecan in patients with triple-negative breast cancer with low levels of HER2 expression. When it comes to the sequencing of medicines in the metastatic triple-negative breast cancer setting, this is a decision that's made between each patient and their oncologist based on how well the patient's feeling, any lab abnormalities that are present that may make it unsafe to treat with certain medicines, other medical conditions that a patient has, and then data supporting the benefit of each medicine that's an option. In general, oncologists will try to use the most effective medicines earlier in treatment. There are a lot of unanswered questions, though, about the best order to use our antibody-drug conjugates. In general, in patients with triple-negative breast cancer, we use sacituzumab govitecan first, and for patients with HER2 low expression, we have the option to treat with trastuzumab deruxtecan later. Chemotherapy medicines that are carried by both of these medicines, so the govitecan of sacituzumab govitecan and the deruxtecan of trastuzumab deruxtecan, are both topoisomerase 1 inhibitors. And because of this, that means they have the same mechanism of action. So whether it's best to use them one after another or sandwich them with a medicine with a different mechanism of action in between is a question that we don't know the answer to in an area of ongoing research. Another important aspect to treatment is genetic testing, as this can reveal mutations that a patient inherited that can open the door to treatment with other targeted medicines. Patients with BRCA1, BRCA2, or PALB2 mutations, which impair how damaged DNA is repaired, can receive medicines in the family called PARP inhibitors that can be helpful in patients with these mutations. The most commonly used PARP inhibitor in breast cancer is called olaparib. Genomic testing typically refers to testing for somatic mutations in the cancer itself rather than germline mutations that the patient inherited. Genomic testing can be checked on tissue from a biopsy of a site of cancer. For example, if a patient has a biopsy of the liver, a small piece of tissue from this biopsy can be sent for analysis to look for mutations that are in the tumor. But another less invasive option for genomic testing is with a blood test that looks for circulating tumor DNA, which is small fragments of DNA from the cancer floating around mixed in with a patient's blood. Circulating tumor DNA can be separated out and analyzed for mutations. Somatic alterations that are found in genes like BRCA1 or BRCA2 can sometimes make treatment with a PARP inhibitor an option for a patient, and other mutations like specific mutations in PIK3CA, factors that result in replication stress like mutations in TP53, RB1 loss, CCNE1 amplification, or MYC amplification are all alterations that are being investigated in clinical trials as potentially actionable targets for medicines. Overall, these genetic and genomic tests are important because they can identify potentially targetable alterations in the cancer, opening the door to additional treatment options. And like Dr. Jones emphasized in her section, a lot of these targetable alterations are things that are being investigated in ongoing clinical trials. And often participation in clinical trial is the only way to have access to these medicines targeting these specific changes in the cancer. So consideration for participation in clinical trials is always a good option if that's something that's available where you're being treated. And with that, I'll hand it back to you, Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Panucci. That was an outstanding presentation and focusing on the role of biomarkers and genomics and precision medicine, all very important issues, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Just a stellar presentation. Thank you so much. So I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Dr. Claire Smith, and Dr. Smith is a breast medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and she'll be discussing tips to prevent and manage treatment side effects, symptoms, discomfort, quality of life, lifestyle, neuropathy and pain, and practical strategies to cope with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. It's my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Smith.
Hi, thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and for the opportunity to talk to everyone today. This is a big topic. I think there's a lot that we could cover here. I've tried to distill it down into what I feel like my patients are most often facing and make this relevant for triple negative breast cancer, and I look forward to anyone's specific questions about what they may be facing. I think when we think about side effects, it's important to realize that, as we've highlighted, there are many different treatments for triple negative breast cancer and that each of these treatments may have different side effects. In general, I think about chemotherapy and antibody drug conjugates as having overall somewhat similar side effects, but knowing that each individual drug might have very unique side effects that your doctor should inform you about and you should be aware of. For example, trastuzumab deruxtecan, which Dr. Fanucci spoke about, has a rare risk of lung inflammation that can show up as cough or shortness of breath. And that's pretty unique to that medicine. So being informed and aware by talking with your doctor is important. So I think many of these, I'll say, are kind of anecdotal in my experience, and I'll try to highlight for you where we have some evidence for how we manage some of these symptoms. So one of the primary symptoms my patients experience is fatigue. Fatigue can be multifactorial. It can be caused by the cancer itself. It can be caused by immunotherapy, chemotherapy, and also the targeted treatments that have been mentioned. Strategies to help improve this include trying to prioritize some light daily activity. That can actually reduce fatigue. And if you're able to balance in enough rest with that light daily activity, you might find that your overall fatigue level can improve. Trying to eat small meals that are rich in nutrients, like healthy fats and proteins. And then if your fatigue is extreme and you feel out of the ordinary, talking with your cancer doctor about it, because it may be that you need a lower dose of chemotherapy or a lower dose of your treatment. Extreme fatigue can also be a sign of medical conditions like anemia, thyroid dysfunction, or other endocrine issues that can be caused by immunotherapy. So talk to your doctor about your symptoms of fatigue. It may not just be something as a side effect of treatment. There may be something else going on. Another common side effect people might experience is nausea, and in worse cases, vomiting associated with that nausea. Your cancer doctor will likely prescribe you different anti-nausea medicines to have at home to take as needed. And then the important thing to realize about those medicines is they work best if you take them proactively, which means don't wait until you are nauseous and feel like you need to vomit, but take the medications beforehand. And it is okay generally to take those medicines even on a regular basis if you do anticipate you're going to be feeling nauseous. There are a number of different nausea medicines to try, so if your doctor has only prescribed you one and it's not working, discuss with them what other options there may be. There are some options that are as needed. There's some options that are on a daily basis. One medicine I like to use a lot is olanzapine, which you actually take at bedtime, and not only does it help cover nausea throughout the day, it can help with sleep at bedtime. So that could be a good one to ask about. Think about if there are other things going on that could be leading to nausea. For example, constipation I commonly see as leading into a patient feeling nauseous. So consider if you need to perhaps treat other conditions like constipation. Acid reflux is another one that can sometimes lead to some nausea. In terms of what you should eat and drink if you're feeling nauseous, in general, people feel like smaller, blander meals are better than larger, you know, more stronger meals. And then it's important to note that the nausea may not always be caused by your treatment, and that sometimes if the cancer is in certain parts of the body, that can cause nausea or vomiting in and of itself. So, you know, talk to your doctor about, you know, why you're nauseous. Is this from your treatment, or do they think it could be related to the cancer? If it's related to the cancer, there may be procedures or other treatments to consider. The next symptom I highlighted here would be changes in weight and loss of appetite. I think this can be really challenging for a lot of patients. A number of our therapies, chemotherapy and antibody drug conjugates specifically, ruin the taste buds, so food just does not taste like it used to, and unfortunately this is a symptom that continues and may not improve. So, you know, it's always helpful, I think, to ask for a referral to a nutritionist or dietitian to talk about strategies here. If you're really struggling to get in enough nutrients, consider adding in like a high-calorie protein shake like an Ensure, or you can make your own smoothies with a high-calorie protein supplement. In certain cases, we, you know, we might discuss starting a medicine that's an appetite stimulant with a patient. There are a number of different medications that can work on this. And then some patients have tried medical marijuana and found there to be benefit with that as well. Next, I highlighted neuropathy. Many of our treatments, mostly chemotherapy and antibody drug conjugates, can lead to neuropathy. This tends to be cumulative, meaning the more treatments you've gotten, the more likely you are to develop this. And this is numbness, tingling, pain, burning in the fingers and toes generally. We actually have some newer, exciting data in the prevention of neuropathy in the last year or so with a study that looked at using compression gloves during chemotherapy treatments. And this study found that by wearing a tight pair of surgical gloves during your chemotherapy infusions, you can actually prolong and prevent the onset of neuropathy. So our current recommendation for patients is to wear two pairs of tight-fitting surgical gloves. So this would be generally one size down from a glove that would normally fit you comfortably, and wear those two gloves 30 minutes before, during your chemotherapy, and then 30 minutes after your infusion. We don't have data yet on if this strategy is still effective for people getting treatments long-term as opposed to a limited course of treatment, but I think it's definitely worth considering as it's a pretty minimal intervention that could really, I think, prevent the onset of neuropathy. So the gloves are, of course, for the hands. I think it's a little more challenging to know what to do about the feet, where we also definitely see patients develop neuropathy. I think the best strategy there might be to try some ice-cold booties on the feet during chemotherapy. There's not really an easy compression garment to wear for the feet currently. The next topic I had was on pain. So pain, I think, generally is related to the cancer itself, but with these other symptoms could also be as a consequence of your treatments. You know, in general, I think it's safe to take Tylenol, but follow the dosage on the bottle. I think try to reserve NSAIDs, things like ibuprofen, Advil, for only occasional usage, as these medicines can sometimes increase the bleeding risk, and talk to your doctor about if those are safe for you. And some patients should probably avoid these NSAID medicines altogether for pain. In terms of stronger medicines for pain, such as opioids, there's very good data that in cancer patients, using opioid pain medicines does not lead to addiction. And these medicines are a very important tool to improve quality of life. So I encourage my patients who are experiencing pain to not be afraid of this class of medicines and to know that, you know, your doctors are experienced at using these to help you feel better. Oftentimes, we might have patients see palliative care doctors. These are doctors who are specifically trained in how to treat cancer pain, specifically often with stronger medicines like opioids. And they are often the best resource to help make sure that the pain is managed as best as we can while also minimizing some of the side effects of opioid pain medicines, which can be things like constipation, sometimes feeling more tired. Another strategy we use for pain at times is targeted radiation. This can be really helpful for kind of real focal areas of pain related to the cancer, and sometimes the radiation treatment can just be a few days and can be really helpful in the more longer-term treatment of pain. Finally, just a section on kind of some strategies that I've found helpful to patients over the years in terms of how to cope with this illness. Just having someone to talk to. Who is that going to be for you? Is it going to be a loved one, a friend, a family, a therapist? Just having someone that you can talk to about your experience is going to, I think, really help emotionally with coping. If it's for you, there are lots of support groups, both online and in person. I think MediViver has some wonderful online support groups. That type of thing is not for everyone, but if you think that might be helpful for you, they're wonderful. Most major cancer centers are going to have social workers that specifically work with cancer patients, and they can be a great resource for guidance, kind of an extra ear, someone to talk with about counseling and other things you might be struggling with. I do sometimes recommend starting an antidepressant medicine with patients when they're dealing with an acute stress of a diagnosis or an acute stress of coping. Sometimes that medicine for even just a short amount of time can just help the brain kind of re-regulate chemically with the new reality. So that could be an option as well to talk to your doctor about. And then I always encourage people, just try to find some small way that you're going to regain some control. And this might be small. It might be big. It's going to be personal to you. So, you know, 15 minutes of gentle yoga a day, whatever it is that you feel like is manageable that you can gain control of, that can, I think, help you feel like you have some more day-to-day control and management over your life. And your day-to-day does not have to just be about the cancer. And then finally, just a comment on financial toxicity. So this is an actual thing. This is the concept that cancer treatment costs so much that it's actually toxic to people. And there's good data that on people who have higher costs of cancer care, they tend to do worse. They tend to be more likely to go into debt, face serious financial harm. So this is a real thing. It's not something to dismiss. I think talk to your doctor and the loved ones in your life if you're facing financial stress, and know that this is something, you know, your cancer team wants to help you with as well, because I think in the long run it can become a significant burden. And with that, I'll pass it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Smith. You certainly covered a lot in a very brief time, and it really provided such helpful tips for people on the call today. Just a stellar presentation, and I know, and you covered a lot of very complicated treatment side effects in a way that was understandable to our participants. So I know there'll be questions for you as well during the Q&A. Just a stellar presentation. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Bonnie Fuchs, and Ms. Fuchs is Executive Director of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, and the Triple Negative Foundation has funded today's program, so I want to thank Ms. Fuchs for that. And she'll be discussing Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation national programs and services, their helpline, website, and so I'll turn this over to Ms. Fuchs.
Thank you for the kind introduction, Dr. Messner. On behalf of the TNBC community and the TNBC Foundation, thank you, Dr. Jones, Dr. Finucci, Dr. Smith, and Ms. Monaco for your informative presentations. We are so grateful for the wonderful partnership that we have with Cancer Care. This workshop today is one of many programs that are offered by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. Our programming is specifically designed to address the needs of the triple negative community, from patients and survivors to caregivers, loved ones, and I sincerely hope that you will take advantage of them to help navigate through diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. From our website, tnbcfoundation.org, we have TNBC-specific educational brochures and fact sheets that are available as free downloads, information about triple negative breast cancer and dealing with a diagnosis, a TNBC-specific clinical trials matching service, information about our phone and email helpline provided by Cancer Care. Our online discussion forums allow you to connect with other patients, survivors, caregivers, and loved ones to ask questions about treatment, about how to manage side effects. Most importantly, these resources are here to help you and to remind you that you are not alone. It goes without saying that TNBC-specific medical research is extremely important to our foundation. We not only support cutting-edge research at leading medical institutions, but we work hard to inform you about any new developments. Finally, we have monthly virtual meetups for our TNBC community, Metastatic Mondays, Tuesdays with TNBC Friends, and Thursday with TNBC Friends. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram for important updates and announcements regarding educational and support opportunities throughout the year, and be able to register for these and all our upcoming programs. Thank you for joining the workshop today, and I'll turn the program back over to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Hughes. That was just a superb presentation and a great summary of the services that you offer at the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. It is basically your go-to organization for all of you on the call. It has just a huge wealth of information and resources for you, so do take advantage of them. And we all work very closely together with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And this has been, our partnership has been going on for many, many years, over 10 years at least. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Christina Monaco. She's an oncology social worker with master's degree in social work. oncology, social worker, or cancer care, and she'll be addressing how to find the financial, emotional, and social supports to cope, and she'll also provide you with the cancer information about cancer care's resources as well as the TNBC helpline. It's my pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Monaco.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and to Ms. Fuchs and the TNBC Foundation for bringing this workshop to life. It is really such an important topic. As mentioned, my name is Christina Monaco. I'm an oncology social worker at Cancer Care. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care have partnered together, as Dr. Messner said, for at least 10 years to ensure that those diagnosed with a triple negative breast cancer have access to free psychosocial services and support, as well as information on clinical trials too. There are many aspects of a breast cancer diagnosis that could be addressed through psychosocial supportive services, including making informed treatment decisions, making the decision to enroll in a clinical trial, quality of life concerns, or communicating with a person's medical team. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has also generously funded the TNBC Helpline, which provides callers with access to comprehensive services. Some of these services that the TNBC Foundation and Cancer Care provide include resource navigation services, counseling, educational workshops like these, publications, and limited financial assistance. By calling the TNBC Helpline, individuals are connected to an oncology social worker or a Hopeline specialist who is aware of the physical, emotional, and practical challenges that might arise when diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. Individuals diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer might choose to supplement existing social support networks by joining a support group or engaging in counseling. Joining a support group in particular can offer the chance for triple negative breast cancer patients to speak with one another, gather information, and provide support. Cancer Care offers triple negative breast cancer and metastatic breast cancer specific national online support groups, which are moderated by oncology social workers. These online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness or anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources. You could register for an online group through the Cancer Care website, cancercare.org, by selecting Our Services and then Support Groups. Please also know that there is a very strong triple negative breast cancer community, and that on the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation website, you might see that there are some forums online, some virtual meet and greet, and educational materials. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer supportive services as well, so that could be another place to look. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns throughout their treatment, as Dr. Smith mentioned earlier, and this financial strain can play a huge part in the cancer journey, emotionally and otherwise, as we know. So if you are encountering financial hardships or concerns, there are definitely organizations that might be able to help. Cancer Care, in partnership with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, offers limited financial assistance for concerns surrounding a diagnosis, typically like transportation, utilities, or other general household expenses. And of course, whatever we can't help you with, Cancer Care can assist in helping you locate other resources. So we do have a resource navigation program that's a short-term, strengths-based approach to help patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with you in connecting you to resources, referrals, and financial assistance, including copayment assistance for treatment medications. Cancer Care and the TNBC Foundation also offer clinical trial information, resources, and support to help people. Cancer Care has developed a website called mytriallist.org to help as a resource to find, to help people find clinical trials and provide support throughout that process. While the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation also has a clinical trial matching service and links to clinical trial search sites. If you're interested in learning more about the services that Cancer Care or the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation offer, I would encourage you to call the TNBC Helpline at 877-880-8622.
Our oncology social workers and Hopeline specialists can share additional information about our services. It can also help you explore ways to connect with others, again, including our support groups, financial assistance resources, and resource navigation. So again, just one more time to give this contact information, the Cancer Care Hopeline, 1-800-813-4673, and the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation Helpline, 877-880-8622, or go through our websites, cancercare.org and tnbcfoundation.org, where you could send a message through the website, which will be responded to actually by myself or another one of our oncology social workers. It's been such a pleasure to be a part of this workshop, so thank you for your time and attention, and I will now turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Monaco. That was a superb presentation and very lots of information for our participants. I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, but just a stellar presentation. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, so I'm going to bring that up. I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions, and we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Bella?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
There's a question from one of our participants, and this will go to Dr. Jones. Is it rare for for metastatic triple-negative breast cancer metastasis to go to the bones? Is it rare to have ER-positive and early-stage change to TNBC when it metastasizes?
That's an excellent question. In answer to your question, it is not rare. It is common for breast cancer, whether it is triple-negative or hormone-positive, also ER-positive, to travel to the bones. I would say that it is more often that hormone positive is considered bone only, where maybe hormone positive does not travel to other organs such as the liver or the lungs. This is different for triple negative breast cancer, where we are often seeing it not just in bones, but in other organs. The second part of your question was, is it common for hormone positive breast cancer to change and transition into triple negative? And to that, I would say it is not uncommon for us to see that. 30% of the time, the hormone receptor status will change for a patient as their cancer progresses. But I also would like to share that there are some women that have hormone-positive breast cancer that is metastatic. Eventually, even their hormone treatments will not work anymore. And we will treat them just as we treat triple negative breast cancer. That is to say, we will focus on other ways of controlling cancer, whether it is traditional chemotherapy or looking to antibody drug conjugates or even immunotherapy when we can no longer control their cancer with estrogen. Thank you for that question. What you asked shows us exactly the landscape of metastatic triple negative breast cancer.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And a question for Dr. Smith. So do you have any recommendations or tips on dealing with anxiety before a scan or other tests?
Yeah, thanks for this question. It's one that comes up often, and I think patients might be afraid to ask about this, but it is a real thing that I know everyone deals with. I like to talk to my patients about how they want to arrange the scan and the visit. You know, sometimes now there might be an electronic health record app where you can see the results before even your provider sees the results. So creating a plan, do you want to be looking at the results yourself? Do you want to be waiting to talk to your doctor about them? My patients who I think have more anxiety around scans, I give them the option of trying to do the scans the same day as they see me, so that way they're waiting around not as often. My patients who feel like, no, I can wait and I'm not going to look at the results, they'll maybe do scans a day or so before the meeting with me. I think the really challenging situation is when you might have scans, but you're not seeing your doctor for a few days and you've seen the results, and it's very challenging to interpret what the scan says. I think I was always I would caution interpretation of what you're seeing on the scan. You know, I would say half the time when I actually review the scan with the radiologist, I come away with a different impression than kind of what was said, and that's just because there's so much subtlety in the words that they're using, and it's very important to compare these scans to previous scans. So just know that there's a lot that goes into the scans with your doctor actually reviewing them themselves. So let's say just try to work out a plan that you feel most comfortable with your doctor about how you want the scans done and how you want the results shared to try to give you some degree of control over the whole process. And that, I think, can maybe help with some of the anxiety.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And a question for Dr. Jones. For Dr. Fanucci. A question for Dr. Fanucci. Is the metastatic triple-negative breast cancer more common in younger patients?
Yes. So typically, triple-negative breast cancer, it tends to be a disease of younger patients compared to, say, our estrogen receptor-positive breast cancers, which tend to become more common as people get older.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Also, someone asked if this will be available for watching later at a later date, and yes. If you give it about a week, this will be available as a podcast on our Cancer Care website. So you'll be able to watch, you'll be able to listen to and watch the entire program. It will be up for about a year. So it will be available at a later date. So this is a question for Dr. Jones. Is the development with survival rates of those with advanced metastatic triple-negative breast cancer thanks to SG causing changes in baseline treatments worldwide or just in the U.S.? My wife has metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, and we're told that SG is a second-line treatment.
That's an excellent question. And for those on the call, SG is referring to sacituzumab govitecan, which is an antibody drug conjugate that we've been discussing throughout this entire webinar, throughout this entire session. And I will tell you that SASI, another name we like to call it, or SG, or Trodelvy by its brand name, it is part of that landscape of metastatic triple-negative breast cancer that has changed dramatically. So in the last few years, we have moved beyond traditional chemotherapy. We used to only have chemotherapy to lean on, but now with the understanding of targets and by personalizing medicine, we've been incorporating both immunotherapy and antibody drug conjugates like SG or sacituzumab govitecan. And if you look, for us medical oncologists, one place that we refer to for treatment guidelines in terms of which direction to go, whether we give a medicine first, second, or third, we usually refer to our national guidelines, one of which is NCCN. And presently, yes, on this website, SG is listed as second line. But I'm happy to report that in the beginning of our webinar, and just like what you shared with your personal life, ESMO 2025, which was in Berlin, a national conference full of researchers and investigators that have all teamed together to move the needle for breast cancer, we have now data that shows us, even in the first-line setting, even before chemotherapy, if a patient is unable to receive immunotherapy, that is to say they do not have CPS scores or they do not have microsatellite instability, they don't have PD-L1, we can give a drug like SG, and it can be meaningful. And so, yes, I would say that SG is just one,
and you will hear of many more antibody-drug conjugates as well as other targeted combinations, such as when we partner BRCA mutations and when we partner immunotherapy and antibody-drug conjugates. Yes, that's how we're moving the needle. I'm grateful your wife was able to get SG, and I thank you for your question.
Thank you so much. Thanks for clarifying everything. That's terrific. And these are great questions. So what kinds of questions do patients usually ask when it comes to their coverage for clinical trials? How closely does the healthcare team work with helping patients access clinical trials? Could you comment on that?
I'm happy to comment on that, Dr. Messner. So I think that at each clinical trial, even in terms of coverage, do you mean insurance coverage or in terms of availability?
Well, I guess coverage, I mean, there could be coverage through other sources besides insurance, I suppose, but both, actually.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, when it comes to how patients on clinical trial have to pay for their treatment, it varies by the clinical trial. So it's really important that you understand what you're financially responsible for when you sign up for a clinical trial. When there's an investigational drug, so a drug that's not available as standard of care, that medicine will always be provided by the either the company or the consortium that's running the trial, and that will not be something that is charged to you or your insurance. But if there are medicines that are part of standard of care treatments that are included in the regimen, those often are, but not always, are charged to your insurance as they would be if you were being prescribed them as part of standard of care. Many times, things like scans, lab draws, are also charged as they would be for standard of care treatment to your insurance, so they're not necessarily paid for by the clinical trial. And then visits where you are seeing providers are also often charged through your insurance and not to the clinical trial. So you may have co-pays that come along with visits from the clinical trial. So participating in the clinical trial is not always, they're not always able to cover all of the costs that come along with your treatment. Some trials have a patient stipend, usually a nominal payment to try to help pay for transportation or other costs that are associated with coming for the visit, but not all trials are able to fund stipends.
And in terms of, does Medicaid also cover clinical trials or not necessarily?
So yes. So Medicaid should, you know, the pieces of the clinical trial that get billed to insurance are standard of care things that would be appropriate for standard of care treatment for the disease, and so those things go through insurance as standard of care treatment would.
Excellent, thank you. And this is a question for Dr. Smith. Are the majority of clinical trials looking at different immunotherapy-based combinations?
So I think for, you know, triple negative breast cancer, the areas where clinical trials tend to be focused now tend to be, yes, immunotherapy tends to be one of the areas of interest. Other areas of interest are developing newer antibody drug conjugates. So this is, you know, how can we better target the cancer and how can we better deliver effective chemotherapy molecule to the cancer. A number of clinical trials are focused on combinations. Can you combine immunotherapy with an antibody drug conjugate or, say, a targeted pill? You know, there's even exciting ideas about, you know, CAR T-cell therapy and other types of more immune-based treatments. So really the clinical trials are going to cover the broad spectrum of, you know, drug discovery, and that's definitely the case for triple negative breast cancer where, you know, more effective treatments are needed. So
Well, thank you. Thank you. I just want to thank our speakers. You've been phenomenal. I want to thank our participants for asking such really great questions. Although we've done a program like this before, I have to say this program has probably been more phenomenal than any other one we've done on this topic, just because of the questions people have been asking, and of course our wonderful speakers, just amazing speakers. So I want to thank our speakers and I want to thank our participants. Although we couldn't get to everyone's question because there are so many people on the call, I do want to comment on that. For those of you who had a chance to ask a question, terrific, but ask your question also of your healthcare team, because remember, they know you the best. They have your medical records in front of them. And for those of you who are in queue to ask a question, please do the same thing. Take your question to your healthcare team and ask them the question that you would have asked on the call. Also, we have discovered that on all the calls that we do, that most of our participants have difficulty reaching their physicians weekends, evenings, and holidays. So that's really important in the sense of you want to check with your doctor to see if they're available weekends, evenings, and holidays. I also want to ask each of our speakers to provide a takeaway. So I'm going to ask Dr. Jones to provide a takeaway for today's program.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. I had the honor of speaking today about some updated data and some changes in our treatment landscape. And so what I'd like to say as my takeaway is that in the last few years, we've moved beyond traditional chemotherapy thanks to precision medicine. And knowing that it is with our clinical trials, it is with the participation of patients being enrolled, every one of these breakthroughs started as a clinical trial. And research opens the doors to this, to all of us, especially patients who may have had limited options. And my biggest message, the most important message I hope people hear, joining a clinical trial does not mean giving up standard of care. Studies are designed to build upon what we know works. And so if anyone had any hesitations before the call, I hope you reconsider if your doctor shows you one that they think would add value to your life. Thank you, Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Jones. And Dr. Fanucci.
I think the main takeaway from my portion is that the more we learn about cancer, the more we learn about the ability to personalize patients' treatment. And so many of these studies reveal new biomarkers that make available new and helpful treatments and really help customize every patient's treatment plan.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And Dr. Smith.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I guess my take-home point would just be that quality of life while you're going through this cancer journey is really important, and the treatments your doctor's going to put you on are going to impact your quality of life, and just talk to your doctor about what side effects or symptoms you might be experiencing, and being open to working with other doctors such as palliative care doctors or social workers to kind of expand your team to help best, I think, optimize your quality of life.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Smith, would you just...
Yeah, that was mine.
That was yours. Okay, sorry. Okay. Ms. Fuchs?
Yes, thank you. Please follow the tmbcfoundation.org on Facebook and Instagram for important updates and announcements regarding educational and support opportunities. But most importantly, these resources are here to help you and to remind you that you are not alone.
Thank you so much. And Ms. Monaco?
Well, Ms. Hughes, Ms. Fuchs, you took it right out of my mouth, but just that you are not alone. There are resources available, whether it is for social support, practical support, or financial. There are resources and guidance out there that can help to support you on this journey.
Thank you. And actually, it is so true that you are not alone, that have all these resources. We will be sending a SurveyMonkey evaluation in about a week to all of you. And in that evaluation will be all the resources that we mentioned today, the websites, the telephone numbers, everything that we mentioned today. And I had mentioned earlier that for many of you, you're able to reach your healthcare team during the day, but weekends, evenings, and holidays seem to be challenging for many of you. So please do check with your healthcare team who you can contact evenings, weekends, and holidays. That's really important. And again, you know, if you were able to ask a question today, but please take your question back to your healthcare team. And if you basically have a question and didn't get to ask it, ask your question of your healthcare team. Remember, they all know you the very best. And I just want to thank everyone for your participation today. It's been a remarkable call. We have more programs coming up, so you'll be getting information about those. I just want to thank you all for your participation today and for making today's call. Both our speakers and all of you asked such great questions. Such a phenomenal call. Thank you all, and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.